Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
You're listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
This is Paul Hawksby.
And Andy Jacobs.
And this is the H&J Daily with some of the best bits of this afternoon's show. We spoke to musician and Manchester United fan Tim Burgess, who's been doing some brilliant stuff online in lockdown, his Twitter listening parties. And we had a chat with Tim. He was on good form. What else did we like, Andy, today?
Yeah, Striker was fun. It's really, it's really grabbed me. I don't know why. Where were we at? Episode 44, something ridiculous.
Well, 44 tomorrow, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Andy Smart came in with his five best cricket films. Quite eclectic mix, but he was on good form.
Yeah.
Then we spoke to Clive Tilsley, didn't we?
Yeah. Clive has got a little a new venture he told us about and reflected on the 99 Champions League final. He was commentating, of course. It was the anniversary today. And Mike Warne was on good form as well as we looked at tonight's TV. And, of course, don't ask me, Andy was looking for back-to-back victories. Could he do it? Let's find out. Good afternoon, everyone.
Oh, good afternoon, Paul. And it is interesting top-level sport because we had 2 days off from the table tennis and we went back on Saturday. We couldn't even break 100. It shows you why they play practice, darts players practice every day and snooker players. Because you just get rusty. And then we finally... Yeah, then we got back on the wagon over the weekend, but we still didn't break that record. It's still eluding us. 8:37. We got a 7:35. That was very, very annoying. And a 6:83. But I'm afraid with the, what is it, 8:37 looking behind me.
These sound like the start of dog races. All the times that dog races start.
I've got a good transfer rumour for you.
Oh, yeah.
Chelsea are after Porto wide player Jesus Corona, which sounds more like a reaction to discovering you've caught the virus, really.
Yeah, isn't it? Yeah, that's blimey, yeah. You're not going to want that on the back of your shirt, are you, in 6 months'
really.
Time? Well, no need for that, mate. No, he plays for Chelsea. Oh, I didn't realise. Sorry.
That's right. A very good letter from Mark Smith in Worcester, where I think, to the Times, people, I think they've been sort of coming up with names for golf shots, and he's come up with this one, the Dominic Cummings. That's a long drive out of bounds. You missed that one.
Yeah, I'm just saying, my wife just walked in, like, really purposely.
She's not helping my material, is she?
I do apologise. She's not. No, I thought, what's happened? She said, where's it gone? Like, she's going to take the fly out with one single punch. So I can live with it. It's just a fly. It's not a problem. It's okay. Trying to get in on the show now.
I'll order you one of those tennis rackets.
No, I'm not doing that. I'm not killing them off, mate. I'm ushering them out of windows.
Well, you know, they are a bit of a health risk. No, I was just saying, this bloke, Mark Smith, has come up with his name, and the listeners have heard it, so there's no point in me saying it again, but I'll say it for your benefit. It's the Dominic Cummings. Yeah. It's a long drive out of bounds.
Oh, yes, that's beautiful.
It?
That is very sad. It's not your own work, though, is it? Somebody else's.
Well, I know. I'm admiring it. That's perfectly allowable.
Yeah, it is. Of course it is. Yeah.
If I had to rely on my own work, it'd be a disaster.
That's true.
Let's be honest. Do you see this, that Louis Vuitton, the well-known bag company, and
not the plumber.
Leather goods, not the plumber, no, Vuitton plumbers, they'd be expensive.
Do you think they'd sue if you if you put on the side of your van Louis Vuitton plumbers? They couldn't argue. I mean, we had this situation where Joe Lycett went a bit mad on this with Hugo Boss, didn't he? The idea that you might be confused, but if you thought, yeah, it looks classy, I mean, as long as you don't use their typeface, but if you put on the hello Louis Vuitton, yeah, I'll go and get me rods.
Well, you could be Louis Vuitton, couldn't you, or Lou Vuitton?
I mean, if you're going to go for it, go for it. But, They wouldn't have. They couldn't cease and desist, could they? In a case like that, well, one's a plumber, one's a high-end handbags.
But if you had, so, if you had a problem,
slightly off message. What was that in the fly? Slightly having a day off. It's not good.
We're rusty.
We have actually got some sport to talk about. Well,
I was just telling you about Louis Vuitton.
Oh, yeah, go on then.
I've got to finish it now.
Well, he's very football, isn't he? All the players have the wash bags, don't they? All the players have the Louis Vuitton wash bag.
This is football because they've brought out a table football game. For do you want to guess how much it costs? Louis Vuitton table football
say
game?
$9.99, including postage and packing.
Have another guess. I'll only do this once.
Have another guess. £3,672.25.
In near £62,000.
Oh, okay.
Every aspect of the design reflects meticulous craftsmanship with hand-painted players and cowhide leather-coated handles. Mm. The imposing piece is enhanced by subtle house symbols such as counting coins inspired by the monogram flower and a Louis Vuitton engraving, so the logo. Wow. Blimey, you should be fined $62,000 if you buy that.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Me and Jacobs here on TalkSport. That's Empathy for the Devil by Tim Burgess from his new album. Tim has been busy in lockdown. Apart from I Love the New Sky, the album, he has been hosting some Twitter listening parties, a chance to listen to some great old albums in the company of the people that made them. I'm very pleased to say Tim, big Manchester United fan, joins us now. Good afternoon, yeah. Tim.
How are you doing? You all right?
Yeah, good. We're good. Yeah. Enjoy it. Like that. Very much like that track. Humming along today. I mean, was that all kind of completed before this all kicked in? Have you been waiting to release this for a while?
Yeah, I finished it in October. So it's, you know, it was scheduled to come out on the 22nd of May always. And, you know, just I had the option to not put it out. Because of the lockdown and the coronavirus, COVID, you know, but I just thought people would and have something to look forward to.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad you put it out because I've burnt all my Spotify favourite lists. I've played them so much. Nothing. So you're welcoming some new music that you didn't know about and it was really good to hear.
Oh, fantastic, yeah.
Go on, Paul.
I was going to say the Twitter listening parties have been incredible, haven't they, really? It's probably taken off in a way that you couldn't have imagined. I mean, where did the idea come from originally?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, 10 years ago, I did a Twitter listening party for The Charlatans' first album, Some Friendly. And, you know, people enjoyed it. And they enjoyed it so much that I did all of The Charlatans' albums. And I've done them a few times, you know, over the years. Hmm. But, you know, during the lockdown, I tweeted that I would, you know, do Charlatans Some Friendly again. And a couple of people got in touch, namely Alex Kapranos from Franz Ferdinand and Dave Rowntree from Blur, and said that, you know, they're really into the idea and would I consider them doing a listening party, which I thought was a fantastic idea. And then Boned came along and said that he wanted to do Definitely Maybe. And all of a sudden we had a thing, you know. And so it was supposed to be 10 o'clock every night. Everybody listens to an album at the same time all over the world. But now it's 8, 9, 10. And at the weekends, like 5 of them. And we're doing films now as well. And it's, you know, become a thing. So it's very enjoyable. It's, you know, it's 10 hours a day, pretty much, but it's worth it.
Have you discovered any music you didn't know about that you've sort of been turned on to?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I was dancing away with Roisin Murphy. I wasn't super familiar with her music, but it's fantastic. You know, and there's a Nada Surf record last night that I wasn't too familiar with either. I mean, all the time. I mean, you know, if it was just my choice, if they were just my choices, you know, it'd be quite not limited, but, you know, because I've got quite a broad taste, but it would run out of steam pretty quick. So it's open to everybody, really, all genres.
Yeah, that's been the good thing about it, I think, that it has been a fairly eclectic old lineup. It's not just been kind of indie stuff. You know, you did 10cc, the original soundtrack, the other day, and it has been very varied, hasn't it?
I mean, that is just an incredible record. And, you know, obviously I knew I'm Not in Love, but I'm quite new to 10cc, even though I've worked with Kevin Godley in the past. I didn't really know his music until, you know, the past 6 months. But that album, fantastic, yes. We Are King, really great kind of R&B album. Vanessa Francis, another 8 o'clock kind of. So she was like, she's like Irish folk singer. And so the 8 o'clock spot now has kind of been like a place for new artists in a way, and people are tuning in and buying records, so it's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, how are they chosen, Tim? Is it, are these just suggestions, or the artists coming to you, or going to the artists and saying, we'd like to do one, would you be available on this day at this time?
Yeah, all everything.
Yeah,
I mean, I ask people, people ask me, people try and. You know, people are offered, you know, I've double booked people a few times,
right?
It's all about the scheduling, I found.
You've got Lexicon of Love, you're doing ABC, which is an album I love. You're doing that this week.
Yeah. I love Martin Pryor, he's fantastic, and you know, to get records like this, I mean, it's such a buzz, really. You know, I mean, obviously, I've got, you know, a phone with lots of indie superstars in there. But you know, when it reaches out to kind of, you know, 80s superheroes like Simon Le Bon and Martin Fry, then it kind of, you know, you've got a thing.
Yeah, and I'm just looking at the schedule. I mean, you've got so many coming up. So people are going, they just put in Tim's Twitter, listeningparty.com. It's got all the future ones. And also, you've got all the replays as well, haven't you, the ones you've done so far?
Yeah, I mean, that was a game changer, really. Within the first week, two lads who I've never met before, and they're just fans of Charlatans, and they... You know, they built a website and they helped with a diary, and then, you know, the magic was the replay. You know, the replays button, which you can, like you said, you know, listen to everything in real time, which is, you know, the game changer.
Excellent. Yeah, I do recommend it. Go and check it out.
It does look good, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, I was just looking at the website.
He's looking really at good. The website. Let's talk about Manchester United. Are you suffering a bit of football withdrawal, Tim, or how are you coping?
Well, I'm actually not suffering. There has been moments where I've thought, you know, it's Saturday, I wonder who's playing today.
Yeah.
And then it kind of like just, you know, obviously goes out as quick as it comes in, but little bits. I mean, it's always good, isn't it, to sort of, I mean, obviously for you guys, but I mean, for me, who's not the biggest football fan in the world, it's always nice to, you know, to know what the results are.
Yeah. Why was it United for you then? What was the origin of that?
Well, it's you know, my mum, her side of the family is Bolton Wanderers. My dad's side of the family is Manchester United. My dad, he's just recently passed away, but he's been going to see him since 57. So it was kind of, it was always there, really. And me and my sister used to kind of, you know, fight a little bit about Bolton and Manchester United. But United won. And, you know, and then I suppose, like, with the band taking off in the 90s, it was like, you know, United... you know, that kind of happened at the same time where they really took on a new identity, and I think we just ended up watching them and going to games and you know, seeing Ryan and Gary and, you know, and the lads. I took my dad to the opening of the Red Cafe when that first opened, and that was a highlight, a life highlight for him. So, just you know, just United.
And of course, it's a famous anniversary today, and you must have loved that. Where were you in 1999 when that took place?
Well, I was in Didsbury, and I had a TV on a box.
So you weren't in the new camp then?
Yeah, no. In a box, and you know, and I was just getting closer to it, and closer to it, and then it went in.
Yeah. Were the band playing somewhere at the time, or you say you were just at home or something watching?
No, I was just at home. Yeah, right. Just watching it. I mean, you know, I do go to games.
Yeah.
But as I did mention earlier, I'm not like the biggest, you know, football fan in the world. I love going to United, and I only really watch United on you know, Match of the Day and stuff like that. But yeah. You know, I don't make a massive effort to go, you know.
Right, okay.
I'm an armchair fan, I think you call. Yeah.
You did get Gary Neville to play with the Charlatans at one point, though, didn't you?
I did. Yeah, that was a great thing, because I was thinking, you know, that it would be amazing to play on his hotel five-a-side pitch, and he thought that was fantastic. And part of the deal from me was that he would play with us, and he learned the song, and he insisted that we play it early on so we could enjoy the rest of the performance. If it was last, he said he'd be too nervous.
He plays guitar, is that right?
Guitar, was it?
He played on Just When You're Thinking Things Over, and we played it, I think, the second song in. Oh. And it's, you know, it's fantastic. You know, it's, you know, he can do anything, Gary, can't he?
Who knew? Yeah, nice one. So the new album is available now. We're going to play out with another track, Lucky Creatures. Oh, and good to talk to you, Tim. And keep up the listening parties. They've been great. I think they've been brilliant for people. I think people have needed something like this. So it's a great public service, apart from being a lot of fun. So well done.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Great to talk to you.
There we are. So that's Tim Burgess there. You can get all of his new album now. It's in all the usual places. Of course, you can buy a copy as well. And we're going to play Lucky Creatures now.
Feeling lost and found, tackles on the underground. So scared to put a foot wrong, you don't even put a foot right. Don't you recall San Francisco at all? Leaving on the same flight, see you in the next life. Fraternity.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
And we bring you Striker. This is the series that we've been running throughout lockdown. Steve Bruce is the author. That's right, Steve Bruce, the Newcastle manager, wrote three books, one of which was called Striker. They're all kind of murder mysteries. And Ian Danter is Britain's foremost Steve Bruce impersonator, and we're very lucky to have him. And he has brought the book to life for us. And I think we're up to, episode 44 or something like that? It's hard to believe, isn't it? 43, isn't it?
It's a bit depressing, really.
Yeah. I said we've got to get hold of the next two books. Because I think we've got a bit of time. I think we've got a bit of time to go. Anyway, should I get you up to speed? Are we going to rejoin it now from where we left off on Friday? Lettersford Town manager Steve Barnes, because it's not Steve Bruce, it's Steve Barnes. He's mid-conversation with dodgy nightclub proprietor Terry Corston, who's seeing Steve off the premises.
Ooh.
He kept assuring me that I'd be welcome in the club anytime. I could bring my wife, my girlfriends, members of the team. There was no way I would take Susan into a dump like that. I kept no girlfriends, and as for members of the team, apart from Lawson, who would not be a member of the squad for very long, I didn't want my lads associated with drugs and illegal gambling. At the back door, the youth was still poring over his magazine full of naked girls. I walked to where the Jag was still parked. A police patrol car cruised by. The driver craned his neck to get a view of the Jag. why not? It's an attractive motor. It was good to get to the comfort of my car. Here I was, for a short time, alone. I could use the telephone safely. Now that I knew more about Jimmy Lawson, I felt sure I had the man responsible for the murder and my predicament. As I pulled away, I keyed in Harry's number. Harry Pickles, sports writer for the Lettersford Inquirer. Harry! Steve, how is everything? Fine, Harry. A piece of news for you. I'm listening. I've placed Jimmy Lawson on the transfer list, as from tomorrow. What's the asking price, Steve? Free transfer, I said. You're still in charge, Steve, he said. That the message you want me to put across? Very much so, Harry. Thanks. My next call was home. Susan admitted she'd been worried. She'd tried to get through on the mobile phone, but without success. I remembered I'd switched it off earlier. I apologised to her. When a man is married, he spends a lot of time apologising. Not only when he's wrong, but also when he's right. I promised I'd be home in about 40 minutes. I intended to keep my promise too.
So there we are. A bit of homespun philosophy there from Steve Barnes.
Can't argue with that, can you?
And Jimmy Lawson going on a free. I mean, I wonder who will pick him up. We'll find out in the news bulletin a little bit later on.
It's odd there because Steve used his own name, Steve. But yeah. Susan, his wife, Steve's real wife, is Janet. So you wonder why he didn't call her Janet Barnes, for example.
Well, I don't know. I mean, he had his reasons. I still, the mention of the Jag again, if you've just joined us, the Jag has popped up a few times. The quality, the fully loaded
probably
version.
Probably in Steve's garage by now, I'd imagine.
I do sense that he popped up to get his new Jag, was shaking hands with the manager, and they were doing some photos for the Jaguar magazine, the local paper. And he had a cup of tea with the manager of the franchise. And he said, what are you up to, apart from the football, obviously? He said, well, I've written a few books. He said, oh, yeah. He said, you know, I'm going to have to get them printed. He said, well, look, a couple of mentions of the Jag in there, and we'll pay for the print run. I'm not suggesting, of course, that that's the case. You're just a big Jag fan. But that wouldn't have been a bad job. But I'm sure that wasn't, I'm sure. Steve fronted it. Well, it's a proper publishing company, isn't it? It's published by Paragon Press. I'm sure they picked up the tab, and all the mentions of the Jag are very much in character. Very much in character, I think, for Steve Barnes, who loved the vehicle.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Hawksby and Jacobs here on TalkSport with you through until 4 o'clock. Every week around this time, Andy Smart, ball runner, comedy store player, cheese chaser, non-league football journalist, joins us, friend of the show, and gives us his top five movies from a particular sporting genre. We have reached cricket now after several weeks. Good afternoon, Andy.
Afternoon, boys.
We're going to talk cheese chasing, one of your skills.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And yesterday would have been the spring bank holiday cheese chasing at Cooper's Hill in Gloucestershire. But despite the fact it wasn't on for obvious reasons, the master of cheese, Jem Wakeman, still climbed Cooper's Hill at 5:30 in the morning and symbolically dropped a wheel of double Gloucester substitute.
Of Gloucester, yeah.
So, you would have been there.
Why did
you?
He get up so early for? Why didn't he do it? Well,
because otherwise, if he'd have done it at the normal time of midday, they would have had people turn up to do it.
Right.
Because even on the year they had the foot and mouth disease, people turned up and just chucked themselves off the top. I mean, it's such a steep hill. It is absolutely crazy, but they've been doing it for like 1,400 years, so they're not really going to stop now, are they?
No, that's very true. So we'll move on to the cricket movies, and we like to play a clip of as many as we can, but which would be fine for maybe a Hindi-speaking listeners. I don't know, because obviously with cricket, so many of the great cricket films are based around Indian cricket. Not all of them, as we'll discover, but we are going to kick off with one that falls into that category, Jersey.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit more. I'm not going to kick off with a clip.
All right, sorry.
I'm going to kick off with you telling
us. That's what I was waiting for. Sorry about that.
I think it may be lost.
It would be difficult because it was made in the Telugu language.
Right.
For that part of India. It came out last year, and it was so popular with a subtitle version, they're now remaking it as a Bollywood film. Basically, it's a story of a kid in New York who sort of gives this woman a book in a bookshop, and then she says, "Why are you giving me this book?" And he says, "Oh, it's about my father." And it turns out, then it goes, then you get a flashback back to '86, and it's a player on the outskirts of the national team who, because of selection politics, he doesn't get picked, so he gives up cricket, and he gets a job as a civil servant, and then he gets accused of bribery, and then his seven-year-old son, so he's got no money, and his son says he really wants an Indian jersey for the Indian cricket team, the pale blue jersey. And he says, I'll get you one. And then he can't get the money together, and he ends up playing in a charity match, and he's promised a big fee, and he doesn't get it. And it's a real feel-good movie. And he ends up, I won't spoil it if anyone wants to watch it, because it is just a great feel-good. Like, it's really weird watching the Telugu and the Hindi and the Bollywood movies about cricket. It's very much like the Disney films about sport. They're all about good versus evil, and there's always some massive obstacle that they overcome, and then they it all comes good at the end. And it's very, very along the Disney lines, this one, but it's a good watch.
What are the cricket scenes like, Andy? I mean, in terms of, in a lot of these films, we often talk about the hardest thing doing a football film is to shoot the football. Are they quite good or not?
Yeah, they're not bad. I mean, the guy that plays the lead had never played before, so he actually did 70 days training with a cricket team to get up to a good standard, good enough standard to be in the movie.
Oh, okay.
So it's not there's not that much cricket. I mean, there's not much cricket in most of these films, to be honest.
No. it's a shame.
It's been quite hard to find. I think I found a total of 21 films for this. So,
really?
yeah. It's not as easy as baseball or boxing. Let's say that. But yeah, this was one of the ones I enjoyed.
Okay. Well, on to number four. That is a documentary, isn't it?
Well, it's sort of a documentary, but it's got a lot of acting in it. I mean, there's the young kid who plays the young Sachin. It's called Sachin. Mm-hmm. A Billion Dreams. He got the title by tweeting out, what should I call my film? And he picked the best one, and that was A Billion Dreams. And it starts off with a little kid playing him. And the kid's brilliant. He just steals the whole film. and Sachin does a bit of acting in it as well, playing himself in certain locations. Cool. He does all about the match-fixing scandal. They bring that up, and there's a bit where he's with Shane Warne, and I didn't realise he was such a big fan of Mark Knopfler.
Oh,
and
right.
Dire Straits.
Is he?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he loves him. There's one bit, they play the whole of Sultans of Swing, while they're sort of over the top of loads of sort of footage of him playing. But they don't sort of cut after about, a minute. They play the whole song. It's brilliant.
Surely that's a bowler's song, isn't it? The Sultans of Swing.
You would think so. Yeah. Of course it is. That's very true.
What are they doing?
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, I'll cut you some slack on that one, Andy, because there's been some brilliant cricket documentaries. The Edge was great recently. Yeah.
Fire in Babylon, we saw, didn't we, in the cinema?
That's fantastic.
We saw the premiere. That was great.
Yeah. I'm trying to avoid documentaries, so I allow myself this one because there's quite a bit of acting in it.
There's a bit of acting in it. Yeah, Fire in Babylon, sensational as well, if people are looking. This is a departure from the kind of Bollywood films. This is called Wondrous Oblivion.
Yeah, it goes back to 2003. This is a really good feel-good Sunday afternoon movie. Wondrous Oblivion is a story of an 11-year-old Jewish boy who lives next door to, well, some Jamaicans move in next door to him on their sort of terrace street, and the dad puts up a cricket net in the back garden, and this boy's always loved cricket, been terrible at it, and he basically makes friends with the Jamaican family, and they show him how to play cricket. And it's just, it's a feel-good movie. But it deals with the racism of the 60s, basically. That's what it's about.
We got a clip. We got a clip of it. Actually, we had a clip of Sachin, which I forgot to play. I tell you, let's play Sachin. We'll play. Let's just take it out of order. Because James Erskine, the guy who made it, popped in sauce in the studio, and he's mentioned here. So let's give you a flavour of Sachin A Billion Dreams first.
The concept of the feature is it's about Sachin Tendulkar, of course, but what we're trying to do is really explore how he became a sort of god in many ways, but also the man behind the god, and get into his personal life.
I think it's a story that needs to be told. It's a beautiful story. It's a very sensitive story. It's a story of extraordinary talent, but it's a story of great toil, of hard work, of struggle. It's not been easy being Tendulkar.
There we are, it's our old mate Harsha Bhogle there. The
love Harsha Bhogle. Indian
cricket journalist and broadcaster. Anyway, it's Wondrous Oblivion, set, it couldn't be further from the Sachin film, suburban South London in 1960. So let's give you a flavour of that movie.
You are not to start getting ideas.
We have nothing against them, but we don't mix.
You really? Is that a real professional?
You want to play?
Take your back. We shall have some sweet music.
You will get us into trouble.
We are glad to have you here, David.
You say after me, I want to be in the team.
I want to be in the team.
We were just noticing how friendly your son is with the new arrivals.
I haven't encouraged it, Mrs. Dunkley.
You haven't stopped it neither, my dear.
And cut. It's a win of mine!
There we are, a story of sort of racial tensions in the early 60s, as well as a cricket movie, Andy, yeah?
Yeah, the tagline was, a wide-eyed boy in a narrow-minded world. That sums it up perfectly.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I've done. You know, does it get shown on the box much? I wonder if that's available. It seems a bit of
does.
A lost movie.
Seen it
that
on the box.
Yeah.
It sounds good.
Okay, we'll look out for that. Wondrous Oblivion, number two. What have you gone for there, Andy?
I've gone for Iqbal, which is this is one of those films I stumbled across late at night on Channel 4 when I became a bit obsessed with, because we like a lot of people when we do the improv show at the store shout out Bollywood, and so I started watching quite a few Bollywood movies. This one came up, it was about 1 o'clock in the morning on a Wednesday night, and I just fell in love with it. It's the story of a cricket obsessed deaf mute boy from a little remote Indian village as he tries to win a spot on the Indian national team. And it's just,
it's
it really is one of those Bollywood films that push the envelope as far as they can. There's some very unusual like training techniques. He wants to be a bowler, and he paints up numbers on all these water buffalo that he's supposed to be looking after. And then he bowls to an old drunk from the village and makes him hit the ball. His sister holds up a number, and then he bowls it where the bloke's going to definitely hit the ball to the numbered water buffalo. So there's lots of shots of this water buffalo just being hit by cricket balls, which is a very weird scene.
Cow corner, effectively.
Cow corner, yeah. And there's this match fixing, and there's this rivalry with the evil batsman, Kamal, who's got everything from a posh school, and he's from this sort of tiny little village, and his dad hates cricket because he says that they're just overpaid idiots who waste so much work time. It's loosely based on a true story, strangely.
All right.
And Kapil Dev appears at the end.
Oh, okay.
As the selector for the Indian cricket team. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No, I loved it. I love it.
That one is in Hindi, but I saw a trailer with subtitles. So I take it your Hindi is sketchy, Andy. So you watched it with subtitles, did you?
I did watch it with subtitles. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, before we get number one, we often ask about the ones that maybe could have made it but didn't quite. I mean, I suppose it's quite difficult with cricket fiction movies, isn't it?
I've got one.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, that was made for television, but is a film. It's one of the best things.
I think you're pushing it there. I know what you're going to say. Channel 4.
Patang Yang
Kipperbang.
It's a wonderful film, it is. And it's John Arlott's in it. And I think it's a film. It's an hour and 25 minutes, which is longer than a TV show.
It was made as a film. Yeah, that's very true.
Written by Mr. Rosenthal, very good writer, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, very good. So, okay, we'll give you that one.
Australian films. Yeah. You'd think Australia, with their love of cricket, they'd have some great films. They've got the three worst films I've ever seen in my life. One was called... the one I managed to last about half an hour of this one. It was called I Know How Many Runs You Scored Last Summer.
Oh, no.
That doesn't sound great.
It was a mustachioed serial killer works his way through a cricket team for revenge 20 years after he'd been traumatised.
Oh, oh no.
Written by Steve and Bruce, killed, is it, by killed, any chance?
He kills them with different bits of cricketing gear, like, you know, stumps
Does he asphyxiate someone with a box?
I hate to think what he does with the bales.
Yeah. What a thought. That sounds like a right stinker.
I can't believe you didn't include that great Disney one, the Nathan Lion King.
Oh, no, don't start down that route. Don't start down that route, the Nathan Lion King.
There was another one called Backyard Ashes, which is basically about backyard cricket, which is very popular in Australia.
Yeah.
Where you get points for hitting different parts of the wall and stuff. And it starts off with this English bloke comes and plays with them, and he hits a ball that knocks the cat into the Barbie, and they then play for the ashes of the cat.
Oh, it's dark. Sorry, kids. Sorry, kids.
That is dark. Bad.
So we're tight for time, Andy. Give us number one. What's your number one?
Number one would be Lagan. Lagan, which has got quite a few of my mates in it. I was nearly in it. It's got Chris England, Howard Lee, Ray Eaves, and John House. And it's basically set in 1893 in India. And they've got this match between the English and the local villagers. So if the villagers win, they don't have to pay their tax for 3 years. And if the English win, they can triple the tax for that year. Yeah. And it's so beautifully shot. It's 3 hours, 45 minutes long.
Wow.
But it's beautifully shot. There's some fantastic, if you like the Bollywood dance scenes, there's some fantastic dancing. The cricket is unbelievable. Chris England plays the final bowler. My mate Howard Lee, he got himself the cricketing pads and as the wicketkeeper, so he's in almost every shot. So if you're ever in a cricket film, play the wicketkeeper. And,
good idea.
It's just a great film. It's got everything. It's got match fixing. It's got good versus evil. It's got a hat trick. It's got everything.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what we do. Andy, we're going to have to be ever so quick because we're late.
No, very briefly, to say that I don't know what you're planning for next week, Andy, but it struck me that there's quite a lot of miscellaneous sports. There's Slapshot about hockey. There's Foxcatcher about wrestling.
Oh, no, I've got that. It's all planned.
It's all sorted. He's on the case.
Right.
I'll tell you what we'll do. We won't play a clip of Lagan. We'll play a bit of music from it because it is a musical. So we'll play a bit of music and we'll catch up with you next week, Andy.
Lovely. All right. Cheers, boys.
मन धड़काए बदरवा मन धड़काए बदरवा मन धड़काए बदरवा
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from Talk Sport.
Beckham into Sheringham and Solskjaer has won it. History is made. Manchester United are the champions of Europe again, and nobody will ever win a European Cup final more dramatically than this.
So there we are, Clive Tilsley commentating for ITV on the Champions League final in 1999. It's the anniversary of the day. It's also the anniversary of Arsenal winning the title at Anfield in dramatic fashion 10 years earlier. And a man that was commentator of both those games joins us now. Clive Tilsley, good afternoon, Clive.
Hi, guys. You all right?
Yeah, we're good. Thanks, you. Right? Yeah. What are the memories that come flooding back of 99 when you hear that first off?
Oh, wow. It was probably the biggest night in my career because it was the final game of my first season succeeding the late, great Brian Moore as ITV's senior commentator, which were the most massive boots to fill. Wonderful commentator, even more wonderful man in many ways. And it's been great the last couple of weeks. There's been plenty of opportunity to listen to Brian in action again with the ITV Euro 96 reruns. And I guess if I'd messed up those last 3 minutes, I probably wouldn't be having this conversation with you now. I think I wasn't on trial. I had a contract and I'd been at ITV understudying him for 2 years prior to that. And he'd mentored me in many ways. But there was 20 million people watching that night. Manchester United were chasing a treble. And of course, the events were as extraordinary a 3 minutes of football as we probably any of us have witnessed. And I managed to get the goal scorers right.
It's an illustration, Clive, of how important, obviously, I mean, it's fantastic from a career point of view for you, because you've got this fantastic dramatic conclusion and that piece of commentary that's going to be played forever. But you're very reliant on the players, aren't you? Without that comeback, it's a pretty routine 1-0 to Bayern Munich, and the game doesn't have that same resonance, maybe.
It would have been a flat finish to the season, because obviously the treble chance would have disappeared. It would have been a particularly flat finish for me, because not only had it been a disappointing game up to that point, the one goal that had been scored, I got wrong. Got the goal scorer right, but I thought Basler's free kick had been deflected. I blame Peter Schmeichel wholeheartedly, as I think he probably was to blame for the goal, if the truth's told. But he was the best goalkeeper in the world at the time. And I just assumed that the free kick had clipped the wall and wrong-footed him. And it was only when I saw the replay that I realised that it had gone clean through and Peter had missed it. And I'm thinking, with 5 minutes to go, here I am, biggest night of my career, the job that I'd always wanted, and the only goal of the game, and I've got it wrong. So thank you, Teddy, and thank you, Ollie.
Yeah, that's right. Teddy's on the sports bar later on, so he'll be able to explain more with Andy and Jason. But Andy, what were you going to say?
Yeah, well, of course, 10 years earlier, that was Arsenal at Liverpool, and that's one of Brian Moore's big moments, isn't it? I mean, up for grabs now. It's one of the most famous bits of commentary. But you were working in radio at the time.
I was working for Radio City, the Merseyside radio station. And obviously the previous 2 months had been extraordinary in such a different way. I think a lot of people don't make the natural association between Hillsborough and that event, and the fact that Liverpool were going for the League and Cup double, which, as we know, was a major, major achievement in that era. And it would have seemed to be almost the emotional fitting climax of this extraordinary event that the football club had to deal with. Kenny and Marina Dalglish, just extraordinary response to the aftermath of Hillsborough. And here they were, a minute away, you know, the famous close-up of Steve McMahon walking around the field, holding up his index finger, one more minute. Kevin Richardson had been limping. It looked like he was going to have to come off, and then he dispossesses John Barnes, and I was heartbroken, not because I was a Liverpool fan, but because I was a local radio commentator having my story spoiled. But little did I know then that Lee Dixon and Alan Smith would become two of my better friends in football, and they were both nearly as heavily involved in the decisive goal as Michael himself. Mm.
Now, both the games we've mentioned, you did, for every game you commentated on over the years, you did prep notes for, and I'm sure people have seen these little kind of crib sheets with all the teams and all the subs, the referees, notes, stats.
Very
little
neat, aren't they? Very
mini pen picks of the players. And copies of these, Clive, are now available. You've set something up, haven't you, today, I see.
Yeah, there's been a little bit of interest in the commentary charts that I've compiled for the big games that I've commentated on. They seem to have sort of found their way into the public domain in the last year or so, social media and the likes. And I just thought that it was a nice keepsake for people, almost a memento of the special games, a strange memento, because the commentary chart that the commentator compiles with all that information is a snapshot of the kickoff. All it tells you is the lineups before a ball was kicked. And in a way, it leaves you free then to recall your own memories. If you look at this framed piece of art, football memorabilia, hanging in your office or downstairs loo or whatever, then hopefully it'll bring back people's own recollections of whether they were at the game, where they watched it, of Brian Moore, of, you know, the Martin Tyler's commentary of the Manchester City Queen's Park Rangers game. So I picked out nine very famous games from the last, the earliest would be Everton Bayern in 1985. Drawn up and printed off the commentary charts, and we've made them available now for purchase, either rolled or framed, and you can see all these on www.commentarycharts.com.
Yeah, Andy, yes, they've got Chelsea Bayern there. I think that's up your street.
Chelsea Bayern is there.
Oh, that's good.
And Ajax is there, which I did off Tube. So there is a Tottenham game there too. There's also the final, which I did off Tube. But you might not necessarily want to buy the one from Madrid. I'd go for the one from Amsterdam.
Okay.
How much, Clive, how much do you sorry, I was going to ask you, because they are quite small. I mean, you're in a commentary box. I mean, this is your skill, of course. But, I mean, how easy is it to use these notes as you're commentating? Because you're looking at the pitch. You're looking at the monitor. You've got these notes in front of you. You're reacting to what's going on. Are there games where you just don't even mention some of the stuff you've come up with, or do you always use them in some way?
I would hope that you'd never use more than 10 or 15% of the information on there. I mean, if there is such a thing as a skill to being a commentator, it's not drawing up the charts. Anybody can do that. It's how you use the information. It's the editorializing. It's the journalism, if you like, because if you just submerge your listener or your viewer in fact after fact after fact, you're going to turn them off. So that, you know, the information is there, partly as a safety net and partly as a bit of a comfort blanket, because I think psychologically, if you look down at those notes a minute before the red light comes on, what they say to you is, you spent the last 2 days doing your prep, you've done it properly, no excuses, on you go. The charts that we've actually printed up are an authentic reproduction, if you like, because firstly, because the originals have tended to be auctioned for charity. I mean, Sir Alex Ferguson had his two Champions League victories framed, the originals, actually in his office at Carrington. He made a very generous donation to a cancer charity, and I gave them to him. And one or two others have found their way into clubs, museums and stuff. And they tend to be spread over two or three charts, but two or three sheets when I'm working. So what I've done is condensed the information, written it out personally. It is a if you like a mini version of the chart that we would use for a game, or I would use for a game.
Good stuff, Clive. Lovely to talk to you as always. We'll catch up with you soon.
Guys.
Thanks very much. Take care.
Indeed. Bye-bye.
Clive Tilsley there. You can go and get those commentary sheets.
They're nice looking things.
They are, aren't they? Yeah. I mean, they're fantastic. So commentarycharts.com for more information.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
So we turn to TV this evening and we'll discover what's worth watching. As always, in the company of stars, Brighton supporting Mike Ward. Good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon, guys.
We're doing anniversaries today. Today was the day that the replay was played in the FA Cup final. But we're not going to dwell on that. We're going to move on.
You really are rubbing salt in.
We're going to move on. We're going to move on quickly.
Yeah, that was a low blow, wasn't it?
Only Smith had scored. So, Rob v Romesh. I know Andy's been watching. You've been enjoying it.
Yeah, it's been fun.
It's cricket again. It's part two of the cricket.
It's part two because the cricket trip, which is the final part of the series, the four-part series, obviously was worth more than just one episode. And it's great fun. The first episode last week was, there wasn't much cricket in it.
Not much cricket.
There was a lot of filling. As cricket, you know, if you watch cricket over the years, you're used to people filling if necessary. But this is obviously for other reasons. This second episode has a lot of cricket in it. We saw last week they got a bit of coaching from Kevin Peterson, and they're able to put the what they've learnt into effect in this one, because they turn out on the pitch in their full England whites during the lunch break to undertake a challenge with Nasser Hussain whacking a few balls for them to catch and to see which of them can perform best with their new fielding skills.
Right, it's not going to be good.
I won't spoil the surprise. It's great entertainment. They also get to meet the Barmy Army, which they decide is slightly less scary than they'd anticipated. But best of all, they get to step into the TalkSport commentary box with Darren Goff and Neil Manthorpe.
Yeah, I remember it, actually.
It is hilarious because they are utterly hopeless. But what's brilliant is that the reaction on social media was immediate. And throughout this clip, you will see all the comments going up, you know, at the top of the screen of people, you know, who get this bunch of Muppets off. Please make it stop.
Commentary is very difficult. I worked with a guy once. I won't name him. He was a comedian. Not David and Frank. It was way before that. It was a comedian. And he said to me, we were doing some sort of celebrity game we were covering on TV. And he said to me, oh, it's easy, this commentary lark, isn't it? And he was absolutely hopeless. I mean, really hopeless.
Yeah.
Because it isn't easy. It's difficult.
A cricket commentary is particularly hard. And also because you've got to get the right tone. I mean, to be fair, they weren't really trying in any recognisable sense of the word to provide genuine cricket commentary, not least because Rob in particular knows nothing about cricket. I did a little bit of as a summariser once on a local station when in my early years as a Brighton fan, and I was really, really awful, and I recognised those social it was pre-social media, and all I could say is thank goodness for that, because the blistering ineptitude that I demonstrated on those afternoons was something that's yet to be surpassed.
Somebody will dig those tapes out.
It's always struck me as very difficult art. So Spring Watch is on.
It is. Everything, the seasons are carrying on, they've decided. And yes, Chris Packham and co are doing the usual thing, but normally they all gather at some and sit on sort of bales of hay somewhere, don't they, and sort of chat and exchange banter about wildlife things that go way over my head. But this time they're all staying on home turf. They're all staying, or thereabouts, as close to home turf as you can get away with, which seems to be quite a long distance from home these days, apparently. But anyway, Chris is in the New Forest, and the others are in Wales, Cornwall, and Makeda Strachan is in South Africa, which is unfortunate because...
Honestly, the last line of your review does sound like a carry-on film.
Sorry about that.
I know.
Well, I have to, I'm very predictable on these things.
She's popping up and showing us some of her best bits, apparently.
Yes, I didn't want to read it out.
I used to watch this. This was my gig on TV. But I always got the Spring Watch and all that. A
lot of material?
It used to be. I mean, it wasn't lots of them, but it would turn out a few absolute corkers for us. And I remember once, Martin Hughes Games, who was one of the presenters, we had a clip with him. And then the following week after the burp had gone out, Chris Packham back referenced to it. So it was, they were clearly seeing the clips. But
they never used to do that with EastEnders clips, did they?
No. They weren't as happy.
Not so keen.
I think they got a bit happy when they got paid for them in the later series. But anyway, Spring Watch. That's a good diverting hour of telly.
It is diverse. I don't know. I suspect, because obviously they've had time to prepare, it will be a little bit more than just people sort of shouting at us down their iPhones. We're now getting used to these sort of home produced programmes, aren't we? We accept this as sort of the quality isn't as great as it would be in a perfect world, but it's certainly better than it was at the start. So
I haven't got time to go into it here, but probably will tomorrow. But the Archers came back yesterday. It was a disaster.
Was this the one where they're all doing it from home?
It's their inner thought. I mean, whoever came up with this idea was completely bonkers. Let's carry on with
telly.
It's
not going to be like that the whole time, is it? Is that just a one-off?
Apparently that's what it's going to be like. It's awful.
What shall I have for tea tonight? Was it slightly echoey?
Exactly.
Oh, it's not, is it? Yeah.
It was really quite poor. And there were sort of gaps. The actor would say something and leave a little pause. So I in the end, drove my wife mad. I played the other character. I just kept going, well, that's really interesting.
I can see how that might get annoying.
It was.
So where should we go next? Spring Watch.
House Through Time?
A House Through Time. What's all this about?
Yeah, this is a history series. David Olusoga, who's basically a historian whose shtick, as it were, is that he discovers old properties with a sort of fantastic history to them then goes through, it's a bit like a sort of property version of Who Do You Think You Are? So he goes through all the sort of archives and the library records and the story of the people who have lived in these places over the decades, over the centuries. They're not, significant to the whole wider world as it's such. It's not telling you anything that sort of changed the shape of the country as we know it. But they're little sort of snapshots of ordinary lives. I say ordinary, they're obviously quite wealthy lives in a lot of these places because they're huge houses. But yes, it's intriguing in its own way because it does make you stop. If you live in an old house, any old house, you do sometimes wonder, as I do, because our house is about 150 years old, something like that. You do wonder, I wonder who was standing once and where I'm standing right now. Were they doing TV previews on a Tuesday afternoon?
Almost certainly not. I'd like to think they were. Just finally, a bit like the old lockdown tale, something that's come out of the situation. This is unprecedented. BBC 4 tonight at 10 o'clock. It's got a heck of a cast.
It has got a heck of a cast. I'll be honest, I don't know very much about it because there's no previews of this. But you've got the likes of Alison Steadman, James Norton, Gemma Arterton, Rory Kinnear, Lenny James. And these are all, these are going to be going out for half an hour for, I think it's the next three nights, and there's one other episode possibly next week. And they're just 10-minute sort of mini plays, as it were. A whole bunch of top playwrights have written them. Big cast. And they're all reflecting different aspects of the current situation, the NHS side of it, the lockdown side of it, etc., etc. So I know no more than you, but it's 10 o'clock BBC Four tonight and for the next couple of nights at least.
Fantastic. Yeah.
It's interesting, the old 10-minute concept. I know we've got to move on, but yeah. I loved last year the Chris O'Dowd and Rosamund Pike thing. I loved that little series of 10-minute vignettes.
Yeah.
That was excellent. It's, anyway.
It's, more of that, yeah. I think.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Don't ask me to leave it out.
Here we go then. Five questions based on last week's shows. Andy got the magic 5 out of 5 somehow last week. Let's see if he can do it again. First ever back to back.
You got a coating from Adrian.
I certainly did. Made them too easy. Let's see if these are much tougher. Andy, you appeared in a documentary on TalkSport on Sunday. What's the new series called?
The Deep Dive or The Dive?
What are you going with?
The Dive.
The Dive is right. I mean, maybe I should take your first answer. I know a certain man who supports Peterborough suggests I do.
I was on Match of the Day on Saturday as well.
Were you really?
Picture myself. I must send you the photo, yeah. Drogba scored that goal in 2007, and you can see me behind the goal celebrating.
Oh, what about that? Excellent. Yeah, okay, we spoke to our old mate Adam Richman on Thursday from Man vs. Food. He's doing a new YouTube series built around what food stuff?
Oh, goodness. And come on.
No.
Not waffles. It's not pancakes. It's
The two things it isn't. Fine.
Crab cakes? No, it's not. I don't
Close.
Know.
Close. Biscuits. He did.
Biscuits.
Doing chocolate digestives, the humble custard cream. We spoke to David Nielsen, the Coronation Street actor who slips the name of which club's players into Corrie?
Leicester.
Leicester, that's right.
Yeah, big Leicester fan, yeah.
Why did we speak to golfer Connor Syme last Tuesday? What had he done?
Connor had been doing something online. He'd been playing an online game and something happened to him, but I can't remember. Oh, that's a good question. Yeah. I do remember the conversation, but I can't remember what we're talking about.
He it's won great, a European tour event without leaving his front room on a simulator.
Right,
you were close-ish. And Matt Letizia joined us last Monday because it was the return of Harry's Heroes, but it was Harry's Heroes : what was the next bit? What was the story? What was it called? Harry's Heroes.
Something in Europe. Something.
Euro having a laugh. There we are. Adrian, will be pleased.
That was rubbish.
Normal service is resumed. It wasn't that bad. It wasn't that bad.
Oh, you'd be so happy.
We'll see you tomorrow from 1. Have a fine evening. Was that better, Adrian?
Get in there. Yes. Yes. More like it. It was a fraud last week.
Perfect.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
So there we are. That was this afternoon's show.
Of course.
The deep dive. The dive. I mean, it was a rocky start, and then it just got progressively more difficult for you, didn't it? One of those
days.
Yeah,
it was very tricky, yeah. I did my best.
You did.
At least it cooled down. The first hour of the show, honestly, I couldn't understand why I was so lethargic. The heating was on full. It was about 80 hours. Ridiculous.
Oh, no. That's not good. Never mind. Anyway.
It cooled down.
We'll catch up with you tomorrow. Thanks ever so much for downloading us.
You've been listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Hear the guys every weekday between 1 and 4pm on TalkSport.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.